Up next, to wrap up today's show, Jan Hawken returns to talk with Sophie Smith about humanitarian aid workers and specifically Scott Warren, who was tried for just leaving food and water out in the desert for refugees crossing in borderlands. It was a troubling decision, and they're going to talk about what went into it. Jan?
Welcome back to the Old Mole, Sophie Smith.
Thanks, Jan. It's a joy to be here.
Well, in a trial in Tucson closely watched around the globe, a jury last month failed to convict humanitarian aid worker Scott Warren. Warren, a volunteer for the aid group No More Deaths, faced three felony charges tied to his arrest on January 17, 2018 in Ajo, Arizona, for helping two undocumented migrants. Warren pleaded guilty to one. We'll talk about the pleas in a bit. But the jury was split, with eight in favor of acquittal and four against. So, Sophie, as a humanitarian aid worker yourself, living and working in the U.S. borderlands, you have witnessed for years scenes of border policing and threats and violence that residents and others providing humanitarian aid face. What was significant about this case against Scott Warren? And could you say a little at the beginning about the charges against him?
Yeah, sure, of course. So I think the important thing to know about Scott's case is what he's accused of doing is something that happens every day across the borderlands. U.S. border policy has really concentrated on deflecting people away from ports of entry who are attempting to cross into the U.S., from Mexico, from Central America, and border policy has really been focused on policing, so pushing people into more and more deadly crossings through extremely remote areas. So this is happening on a daily basis in the borderlands and has been going on for about 25 years. Scott's case is significant, however, because this is the first federal prosecution of a humanitarian aid worker since 2005, since the Bush administration. So we're definitely seeing an orientation of the U.S. Attorney's Office towards trying to more aggressively restrict the kinds of basic relief that can be provided in the borderlands. So Scott was charged with two counts of harboring and one conspiracy charge in connection to the government's complaint was that he was providing food, water, beds, and blankets to Christian and Jose, two men from Central America, who are also receiving medical care at a known aid station in the town of Ajo, where Scott lives, at a location known as The Barn. That's a widely known humanitarian relief location. And so that's some of the context of the case.
So many in the media, and I think there was even an announcement on No More Deaths declaring this hung jury a victory. What's your assessment of the outcome?
Yeah, I think that, it's difficult in the sense that many of us sitting through the trial for a couple of weeks in federal court in Tucson, where it was dawning on us how weak the government's case was. I mean, what we were witnessing here in the Ajo corridor. So Ajo is a tiny town that lies about 40 miles north of the border, directly north of several federal land jurisdictions that are completely unpopulated, swaths of very harsh desert. So people who are attempting to enter the U.S. on foot are crossing through a very, very threatening area. I was just looking at remains recoveries. There's been 59 recoveries of people who have died in this area alone in 2019. Scott himself has encountered at least 18 people who have died in these deserts. So this is a very, very deadly place. And Scott's case is really not about him. It's really about all of us living in these areas and what we can provide in terms of mitigating these kinds of harms and threats to life. So I think as the government's case was unfolding, it was very uncanny because essentially what the lines of argument were things like, so did did Dr. Warren, Scott has a PhD, by the way, did Dr. Warren provide you the water? Did he pour you the glass of water, or did you pour your own water? This is to Christian and Jose. Did he prepare your food, or did you prepare your own food? So we see a government effort to really focus in on basics like water, food, medical care as constituting harboring crimes. So once it became clear in court that these were really the terms that they were looking to criminalize, there was a lot of hope of an acquittal. And
the bar was so low.
Certainly. Yes, and we're talking about basic relief at this point. And so the interesting thing about humanitarian aid is that there really isn't much case law on this issue. So aid workers, border residents are working in a terrain that's very ambiguous legally and having to make a lot of guesses at what the legal guidelines are for
this
provision.
What are the legal guidelines for humanitarian aid? There's international law related to refugees.
Sure. And we work with organizations, No More Deaths, Aho Samaritans, People Helping People. All these organizations uphold Red Cross Code of Conduct standards. These are not explicitly civil disobedience projects. In fact, this is about harm reduction and impartial relief and universal relief. So while the trial is concerning in terms of the kind of negative precedent a conviction could set, there was a lot of hope for the positive precedent of what an acquittal could set. So if convicted, Scott's case would have set sort of the first precedent just within the district. This wasn't the Ninth Circuit or the Supreme Court, but within the district, if convicted, there would have been the precedent that essentially providing a glass of water to someone you encounter who is undocumented could constitute a federal harboring crime, a felony. And so this extends into the interior in terms of perhaps an undocumented mother serving a meal to her child who was born in the United States constituting harboring. So these are really scary precedents. On the other hand, we would have a lot of clarity with acquittal about sort of some legal parameter and some protection for these acts of care that are ongoing every day. So this was a fight to win. This wasn't simply a case of government repression. There's government repression happening every day in that same courthouse as they conduct speed trials of people who are being charged with criminal entry and re-entry, tried in mass, shackled, being tried, convicted, and sentenced in the space of an hour. You know, that's really a scene of repression. This was something else. This was us pursuing some kind of precedent, some kind of protection through the justice system. And so a hung jury sort of leaves us to wonder, you know, what's next. So tomorrow, the prosecution will announce whether or not they are choosing to retry Scott. If they decide to not retry Scott, it will be dismissed without prejudice, which means they could retry at any time. So we don't really know what to expect. The jury was split 8-4, 8 for acquittal, 4-4 conviction. So, tomorrow is a big day.
And border politics have come on to center stage quite literally with the Democratic candidates, and surprising to many, quite a call for decriminalizing border crossing with Julian Castro, you know, a candidate from Texas, who proposed to repeal a federal law 1325 in the immigration code that makes it a crime to cross the border without authorization. Mm-hmm. That's kind of stunning in a way, and I think many people are not aware of that distinction between mm-hmm. a criminal code and civil law to border crossing. Can you say a little about that?
Certainly, and I'm not a lawyer, but I do work in an area where I have to be
versed
in these issues.
I'm not a real doctor, but I give medical advice all the time.
But I was really encouraged to see some discussion of 1325. I mean, that's a section of federal code that's really familiar to those of us working in the region. So essentially, it is a relatively new fact of history that crossing into the U.S. between ports of entry or recrossing is a federal crime, a misdemeanor, or a felony. It used to be that it was a civil infraction, just like being in the U.S. without documents is a civil infraction. And so it became a law, I think 70 or 80 years ago, but really started to be enforced post 9/11. And by criminalizing migration, then allows for criminal sentencing to occur. So we get the construction of this vast system of detention centers, immigration prisons that are widely run by for-profit entities. So the notion of decriminalizing migration would really dismantle that system that people are now pointing a finger at very loudly around child separation, family incarceration. But honestly, that system was really constructed under the Bush administration and ballooned under the Obama administration. So I was glad to see some substantive discussion of these kinds of changes, because honestly, it's a little bit demoralizing to watch Democratic candidates denounce child separation when those of us working, you know, in the border zone providing direct relief are have been doing so under the Obama administration for a long time and are very familiar with these policies, these punitive and policing based policies directed towards people seeking safety, as being really bipartisan initiatives in which there's been broad consensus. And we even hear that some on the Democratic stage of touting, well, I passed a bill that included $48 billion of spending for border security. Well, that, you know, if we want to talk about family separation, we need to talk about stopping having people die and disappear in U.S. deserts. So it was really good to see that kind of discussion on the national stage.
And we'll see more of that history and many of the untold stories of living in the border zones in a film you were part of that'll be screening next week. It's called Undeterred. And it's screening on Thursday, July 11th at the Ainsworth United Church of Christ in Portland, one of the earliest sanctuary church congregations in Portland. And Sophie, you're in the film, and you'll be there as part of the Q&A afterwards so people can learn more about that. And certainly we'll learn more about the history of the border and policing the border in that film. It's called Undeterred. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Jan. It's a pleasure.